From NPR and the Futuro Media Group, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. This week, indigenous women in Guatemala fight for their land against corporate interests. We hear their testimonies.
We can't allow this because the land gives us our food. It's our mother. We live from agriculture.
And we find out how the Garza sisters made their way back to Conjunto.
When we used to go pick cotton, Daddy always took his accordion, and I just started picking on it.
I used to listen to the radio a lot, and I used to make the tortillas, and in between flipping tortillas, I would take a fork and take the beat of the drum.
All this and more coming up on Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Quédense con nosotros. Stay with us. It's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Today, we're honoring International Women's Day. But just hours by plane from the United States and then by bus into the highlands of Guatemala, women are on the front lines of a new kind of war. They are young and they are old, but they are almost all indigenous. What are they fighting for? The most basic right, to not be forced off your land. In this case, your ancestral land. The women from indigenous groups like the Quiché, Cachiquel, and Mam Mayas make up more than 60% of the population. They bore the brunt of the violence of a 40-year-long civil war, one that ended in 1995. We're on a small motorboat in the western highlands of Guatemala, crossing the beautiful lake known as Atitlan. Surrounded by lush volcanic mountains, this area is so beautiful it was in the running for a new wonder of the world. Along the shores are small communities whose ancestral tie to the land is so deep that they stayed throughout when the government sent troops to find guerrillas. The area became a war zone. The indigenous people here were caught in the middle. In Panajachel, I meet with a group of women who have traveled for hours to give testimony to a delegation led by Jody Williams, the Nobel Peace Prize winner and human rights activist. The women wear their traditional outfits and speak in quiet voices about the new threat they're facing. Maria Guadalupe from Huehuetenango says that since the Civil War ended, mining companies and other huge transnational corporations have moved in. And this has changed everything.
Desde nuestra existencia, sentir y mirada como pueblos, las mujeres mayas de Huehuetenango.
The women giving testimony describe clashes with international mining companies, a David and Goliath paradigm. Poor but proud indigenous communities who have been on their land for centuries versus the money to be made in a post-war global economy. It's a basic clash of two very different worldviews, one based on modern concepts of legal property rights, another based on communal land use and ancestral rights.
The national government continues to authorize the irrational exploitation of our mountains and rivers for gold, silver, and petroleum. This enriches foreign companies, not only taking what belongs to the entrails of Mother Earth, but taking away the riches they obtain.
Sino que se enriquecen con las ganancias que obtienen.
Mining corporations, hungry for gold, silver, and nickel,
set up operations in isolated indigenous areas. Suddenly, huge hydroelectric companies began building mega projects to bring power to the cities. But the government of Guatemala has signed on to a UN treaty that says indigenous communities must be consulted before these kinds of projects move forward. So far, more than 55 indigenous assemblies have rejected mining and hydroelectric plans. But that's all been ignored. Maria Guadalupe says the international companies literally just plow through.
El mismo Estado ha violado las leyes, acuerdos y convenios.
The government itself has violated agreements and conventions by granting licenses to mega projects without first consulting the communities. Facing this, indigenous communities turn to international agreements. With this strength, we organize in good faith, strongly rejecting mining, dams that attack our identity and dignity as people.
Que atentan contra nuestra identidad y dignidad como pueblos.
The meeting with these women to hear their testimony takes place in an undisclosed location and lasts all day long. Many of them won't tell us their names. They traveled in fear of being arrested because they say that when they do peacefully protest with sit-ins or roadblocks, for example, the government then accuses them of terrorism or conspiracy. Claudia Samayoa was also giving testimony. She heads up an organization known as UDEFEGUA, and says that in the first 6 months of 2012, there were some 150 incidents of this kind of retaliation on indigenous people protesting transnational projects.
In most of the cases are brought forward and then they are dropped because there's no proof. But in the meantime, and there is an environment that, oh, see, she is a delinquent, she has a complaint, she has an arrest warrant, and that will create the vicious circle that is the stigmatization against human rights defenders.
Meanwhile, a new generation of young women have risen to leadership positions in their indigenous communities. 23-year-old Ramona Chocon Garcia has delicate dangling earrings on. She has a humble but wide smile. But she's also led protests against a cement company, Cementos Progreso, in her town of San Juan Zacatepeques.
What was the moment when you began to realize that you yourself had questions about this project in your community?
Me di cuenta desde el año 2007 cuando
I started noticing in 2007 when the police and the army came in and started evicting people from their homes and saying, you can't be here because they're going to build a highway here and this land belongs to Cementos Progreso and you have to go.
Aquí se va a instalar la empresa Cementos Progreso y entonces se van.
I asked Ramona to help me understand why she's so adamant about keeping this company out of her community.
Mis papás decían, esto no puede ser. ¿Por qué? Porque la tierra nos da de qué comer.
My parents would say, we can't allow this. Why? Because the land gives us our food. It's our mother. We live from agriculture. Vegetables and flowers come from the earth. We take them to market to sell, and that's how we sustain ourselves economically. The earth is sacred. It gives us to eat and drink.
But in late January of this year, that cement company brought heavy machinery into her town, escorted by workers carrying big machetes. The Guatemalan Human Rights Commission, based in Washington, D.C., says members of a visiting commission were threatened and attacked the next day. In an interesting twist, some of the most contentious projects in Guatemala are not American-owned. They are Canadian firms. The Canadian ambassador, Hugh Rousseau, says he believes both the companies and the Guatemalan government are taking steps toward a new path away from machetes and confrontation and towards a dialogue with indigenous communities.
But very sincerely, I think they are trying very hard right now to make sure that things are done in a transparent and in a way where the communities will be involved from the beginning.
Ambassador Rousseau says, for example, that Goldcorp, the biggest Canadian mining company operating in Guatemala, has voluntarily decided to pay more royalties to the government.
They didn't have to because they are grandfathered under the law right now and they only have to pay 1%. Goldcorp has decided to pay 5%, which is quite a substantial increase in the money that the communities will start be receiving.
The ambassador stresses that social harmony will benefit both indigenous communities and the foreign companies, along with the government of Guatemala.
If they want to understand how mining can help develop this country, if the communities don't participate, there will not be any kind of investment from other countries because companies don't like chaos, really, frankly.
Over the last decade, Guatemala has granted more than 400 mining exploration and extraction licenses. And Guatemala has plans for the construction of almost 50 new hydroelectric dams. Meanwhile, indigenous women like Maria Guadalupe and many others vow to continue to fight for La Madre Tierra, the land that gives them the strength to carry on despite the odds. Our story on Guatemala was produced by Maria Emilia Martin.
El diablo está en casa, pues.
On March 5th, Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez died after battling cancer.
El diablo, el propio diablo está en casa. Ayer vino el diablo aquí. Ayer estuvo el diablo aquí. En este mismo lugar huele a azufre todavía.
He was an influential, though some may say polarizing, Latin American leader. But we want to know what you think. How does the death of Chavez affect us here in the U.S.? Share your thoughts with us on Twitter. We are LatinoUSA, all one word. And be sure to use the hashtag ChavezLusa. And coming up on Latino USA, how the Garza sisters found their way back to Conjunto.
At night when everybody was in bed, they would jump out the window and come and see us because they had heard that there was girls, so they didn't believe it, of course.
That's coming up, No Se Vayan.
Welcome back to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. In Texas, conjunto music has been popular since the early 1900s, with roots in the state's migrant worker culture. German migrants played button accordions, while Mexican migrants played drums and 12-string bass guitars called bajo sextos. Men have dominated conjunto for decades, but a family of groundbreaking women musicians is helping to change that. Delaney Hall has our story.
Lala Garza is warming up on her gold honer accordion. Her sister Marcela Garza Torres keeps the beat on a snare drum. Lala and Marcela come from a long line of musicians, but they haven't played together for more than 30 years.
Oh, I can't believe I missed it. And where's the train when you need it?
Back in the 60s, the sisters played in a family conjunto band called Los Hermanos Garza that toured around Central Texas. Even today, it's pretty unusual for women to play conjunto music. But back when Marcela and Lala first started, it was a really big deal.
It was something new.
Here's Lala.
It wasn't seen very much. We used to play in Mathis, Texas.
And here's Marcela.
And these guys who were studying to be priests heard about us. And so at night when everybody was in bed, they would jump out the window and come and see us. Because they had heard that there was girls, so they didn't believe it, of course.
The priests couldn't believe that two young women would be up on stage, in a club, late at night. Conjunto bands often played in cantinas, bars where proper ladies weren't supposed to hang out. But Marcela and Lala had been breaking the rules for a long time. Lala took up the accordion as a teenager.
So I guess it started when we used to go pick cotton, and Daddy always took his accordion, and I just started picking on it, and then Daddy noticed that I had an ear for music, I guess.
Meanwhile, her sister Marcela started learning how to drum.
I used to listen to the radio a lot, and I used to make the tortillas, and in between flipping tortillas, I would take a fork and take the beat of the drum. And my mother heard that, and she said, "This is good."
For about 4 years, Los Hermanos Garza toured around the state. But in 1970, Lala says, things took an unexpected turn.
We were 2 weeks away from recording with Bego in Dallas. It's a major recording label, but I eloped. So we didn't get to record.
Lala's parents were furious about the secret marriage. The band collapsed and they never got their record deal. It seemed that Lala's accordion days were finished.
At that time, you know, you got married and you stayed home and started a family. So that's why I quit playing.
Eventually, Lala loaned her old accordion to her niece Susan, Marcela's daughter. Like the older generation, Susan learned music from her family. But unlike them, she's not the only woman playing these days. She says female accordionists are popping up all over the place.
From California to South Texas to as far as like the North, Michigan. It's interesting how there's some kind of disturbance in the testosterone zone of conjunto music.
Susan performs and teaches accordion around Austin. She's inspired a new generation to learn about the conjunto tradition. She's also inspired her aunt and mother to pick up their instruments again. Today, Susan, Lala, and Marcela sit at a picnic table in Susan's big backyard and play all together for the first time. For Latino USA, I'm Delaney Hall in Austin, Texas.
I like doing that.
This story was reported by Arlette Flores, Jennifer Gonzalez, Roberto Hernandez, and Stephen Ugalde, and produced by Delaney Hall. If you want to know what South Florida meets Ecuador sounds like, you don't have to look further than El Lado Negro. That's the artistic name of musician Roberto Carlos Lang. You can hear the influence of both Miami boomboxes and South American sounds in El Lado Negro's music, and he spoke to us about his new album, Invisible Life, in his own words.
My name is Roberto Carlos Lange. El Lado Negro, the name came from two different things that were intimate in my life, a nickname that I grew up with that my family gave me, which was Negro, and then helado being my wife's favorite food. It's not the deepest story, but it has a lot of things that are close to me. This new record, Invisible Life, the name came way after I finished the record and collected the songs. Invisible Life is like, you always have this extra thing that you're always nourishing, and if you don't nourish it with the things that it needs, it becomes like this dead weight. This is the first record I'm actually singing in English and Spanish. I'm a very symmetrical person, and on the record, essentially 4.5 songs are in English and 4.5 songs are in Spanish. Well, the song, it's called Junes, and it starts off with like... Nightmares get confused whenever they come to you. Almost like the shit that you think about in your mind is even scarier than when nightmares even come. Árboles is just about all the things that you do are always going to be behind you. And it's like you're planting trees behind you, and these things are going to be behind you, and they grow or they die, and you really can't see behind you. You don't even remember how far back it goes. What I started doing was just making music with computers, and also having the influence of growing up around my family. My dad had always invited like musicians to come over, so there'd always be like these virtuosos playing amazing things in front of us. I've always been pulling on that with El Lado Negro, but I never feel like there's a direct reference or connection. It's not like I'm ever making salsa music. I'm trying to make Latin music for Latin people, Hispanics that are living here, that are me. I mean, like, I'm making the music that's split in half. It's not that we're disassociating ourselves or rejecting anything that's in the past, but we're kind of doing what's happening now for us.
That's Roberto Carlos Lang, a.k.a. El Lado Negro, in his own words. To hear more of his music, go to latinousa.org. And for this week, that's Latino USA. If you have any comments or suggestions, call our listener line at 646-571-1228. You can also friend us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter, where we are Latino USA. That's all one word. Our program is produced by Carolina Gonzalez, Deborah George, Nadia Raymond, Andres Caballero, Lita Hartman, and Michael Jones. We had production help this week from Michael Simon Johnson and Stephen Weiss at NPR New York. Latino USA is produced by The Futuro Media Group in Harlem. Our program was founded at the University of Texas at Austin. I'm executive producer Maria Hinojosa, and join me again next week for another edition of NPR's Latino USA.
Latino USA is funded in part by the Marguerite Casey Foundation, dedicated to achieving a more just and equitable society for all, and the Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live healthy, productive lives at GatesFoundation.org. And Lumber Liquidators, hardwood, bamboo, and cork flooring for the home handyman or building professional. More at LumberLiquidators.com. And the Pew Charitable Trusts, working to ensure the practice of medicine is guided by sound evidence and science at PewTrusts.org. This is NPR.